Well, some people have been born with a silver spoon in their mouth, but Matt Dreich, you were born with a shotgun in your hands, and welcome to the program here at Shotgun Fan.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about growing up, and you know, we're going to get into exhibition shooting and all kinds of stuff in this interview, but as a young man, you were born with a lucky spoon, I guess, when you talk about being able to be out in the outdoors and being able to take a gun and really start out and get really good and proficient with it.
Yeah, I was lucky here. We had 40 acres here in our gun club here, and so when I was 4 or 5, I could run around pretty much anywhere and shoot my BB guns and 22s, and then it kind of just worked on way up into moving targets after that, and bigger shotguns.
Well, as a guy that, you know, you talk about just running around and shooting a BB gun and a 22, you got pretty good at it at a young age.
Well, I had a good, my father's a good teacher, and he worked with me a lot. We had to make do with a lot of training aids because we really didn't have the money to shoot shells all the time, so got a little practice without even shooting.
Well, you know, talk about that a little bit, because some people may not know what you mean by training aids.
Well, we got a rope that we can adjust at different speeds. It's got a target on there, and it goes round and round, and it's about 20 yards long. Comes, you see the target, and then it disappears, and it comes out from behind the wall, and it gives you a good tracking device, teaches you to keep your eye on the bird and not be looking down at those front sights on a shotgun, because you don't want to look at the sights of a shotgun.
Well, you know, as you've developed now, you start out as a young man, and, you know, Bill Tarrant tells some stories about shooting the end of a shotgun shell off, and I'm not talking about the plastic part, just the crimp part, right?
Yeah, I have one trick that I throw up the shell, and I just cut the end of the just knock the shot out without disturbing the wad or the powder or primer or anything.
Now, how many times did it take you to be able to get to do that? And I know you're probably doing that with a 12-gauge, right?
Yeah, I'm doing that with a 12-gauge, also with a 22. I can do it, but I'm not really sure. We just kind of, Dad just kept making everything a little more challenging for me, and just get harder and harder and harder, and just kind of worked into coming up with a bunch of tricks.
The tricks are great. We're going to talk about some of those. One in particular, you start out with this metal plate and shot it with a 22, and you did pretty good with that too, right?
Yeah. We use a 22, and we throw up some clay targets and usually get 3 or 4 holes through the center of them before they break, and then drop down to a dollar piece, and then a 50-cent piece, and quarters, and dimes, and nickels.
And you can hit them with a 22.
Yeah, it's a standard, not bird shot, it's standard long rifle 22.
Well, that's not too bad. I mean, I couldn't hit you if you were standing in the room next to me, so that's pretty good shooting. Well, let's talk a little bit also, as you get, you know, involved, as you developed here and got older, you know, a lot of the exhibition shooting, and did you travel a lot when you did that, and how did you do that?
Yeah, well, I started here when I started putting on shows here when I was about 15 or so, and then we were kind of on a limited budget. I went into service for 10 years, and they had a good shooting program in there for shotgun shooting, and then the show was kind of impressive. Some of the generals liked it, so I put on a few shows for a lot of foreign dignitaries and stuff.
Well, so you got to use your military service to hone your skills even further.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, from the standpoint of now, you were so actively involved in that, and you talked about the budgetary constraints, and I think a lot of people maybe don't know what that means, but I mean, not only from the standpoint of what the gun costs, but from the ammunition as well.
Yeah, well, a guy, if he's in training for Olympics or something, he needs to shoot probably about 8 boxes a day, So then with the shells and the targets, you're looking at, you could spend $100 a day pretty easy training, which kind of adds up.
Well, and the conditioning part of it, a lot of people may not know that, too, because the conditioning part of it is also critical.
You need to space your shots out, because usually the big competition, you'll go out and shoot 25, and it might be an hour and a half or so later before you get to shoot your next 25.
Well, before I go too far, I also want to talk about you and a little exhibition you did with Skeet, where you actually shot 25 targets, had to reload the gun, and you did that in 60 seconds. Now, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, we just kind of developed that for the people that always whine, like, oh, I don't have enough time to shoot. And we said, well, heck, it only takes you a minute. And then we go out there and run around and shoot around the Skeet in under a minute. And usually I can get 24 or 25 every time.
Well, you're also, now you're out west, and, you know, I live here in the central part of the country, And, you know, we can only put three shells in a gun, but you can actually put a few more than that.
Well, that's a true story, too. We can only use three out here for hunting, but my exhibition gun, I can get eight shells in that 870.
So that's how you, with that 870 Remington, I believe, right?
You're right, correct.
You were able to hit that thing, though, 25 times in 60 seconds. That's still choking and winding.
Yeah, you got to run around, hit all the eight stations.
Man, that is amazing. I just can't get over that. Let's talk a little bit about the trap, skeet, and maybe some sporting clays. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing now in the way of education and how much you're still involved in shooting.
Well, I'm pretty much involved quite a bit. I'm training a young gal now that I'm trying to get her for the Olympics. She's only 15. She's got a good start at it. And then we got regular trap and skeet here right at the club here. And then we have a big variety of sporting clays around. I think our gun club here is And Squim here is their first sporting clay course in the United States. Of course, back then we called it field shooting because we didn't know what sporting clays was.
Well, in sporting clays, I kind of think it's reminiscent of maybe playing golf with a shotgun a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, because your trap and skeet everywhere you go is going to be exactly the same, and your sporting clays be like a golf course, but every range you went to would be a different variety or a different setup for throwing the targets.
Well, and as you talk about that, I mean, there's a lot of people that they're doing this kind of as a, it's a release. I mean, a lot of guys do it competitively, but there's also a lot of people that kind of go out and just say, hey, this is a way to socialize and get involved in the outdoors a little bit.
Well, sure, and there's getting more and more gals are getting into it because they don't have to get up early and get all cold, and they don't have to kill anything or they don't have to bring anything home to clean. So there's getting a lot of women are starting to get involved in it with their husbands.
Well, let's talk about the Olympics, if we can, as we go along in here, you know, discussing this whole thing. Talk about how tough is it to make the Olympics, and what when you get there, how tough is it once you get there?
Yeah, well, they got a little bit different setup now to where you make the team, but the way I made the team is we had we'd go out for 4 days and shoot 400 birds, 400 clay birds, and then just the top two people go and represent the United States.
Now, the European version of trap and skeet's a little different than what we have here in the United States, right?
Yeah, correct. What we shoot is called Olympic skeet or international skeet. And the birds there are traveling almost probably twice as fast. And then you start with your gun down at the crest of your hip bone. And then you call pull. And, of course, the guy hits the button right away. But there's a timer built in. It can come out anywhere from 0 to 3 seconds later. And it's quite difficult. Our American skeet to run 200 out of 200 is very common. But the Olympic skeet, I'm the only guy in the world that shot 200 out of 200.
Well, that puts you in a class by yourself. And
right.
You know, now you're teaching though, and you talked about teaching this young lady, but you're also teaching people when they walk in and come to your range, right?
Oh, sure. We got kids from like 7 years old all the way up to 80 years old. We got people coming in.
And
a lot of guys, especially the last couple of months, we've been real busy around here because everybody wants to get tuned up before hunting season.
Well, what about gun safety and some of those kind of things? You do that as well?
Oh, yeah. We make sure that there's, you know, everything's set up. They got to have their earplugs and their glasses, and we supervise them pretty good. And, of course, the guys that come out and shoot all the time, they don't have any problem, you know. But.
Well, as you look at it now, you got a 10-year-old boy or 10-year-old girl, and you want to get them started. What's a good gun, and what do you think you should start them out with?
Yeah, depending on the size of the kid, I would suggest a 410 because if you give them too big a gun and it hurts them, they're not going to want to do it anymore. And so we like to set them up with a 410. Doesn't have hardly any recoil. Then we set them up on a nice, easy straightaway shot to build up their visual confidence.
I tell you, Matt, you know, all these stories about the target shoot and the exhibitions and all that stuff, I'm going to have to come out and get a lesson from you. There's no question about it.
Sounds good.
Well, we still pheasant hunt here in the central part of the country, but a lot of the pheasants have moved to South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we don't have any quail or anything like that anymore, but you guys still have quite a few out your way.
Over in the eastern part of the state, we have some pheasant and quail, and the duck hunting's a little better on the eastern side. Here in the western side of the state, we don't have hardly any pheasants.
Well, we appreciate you being with us here at Shotgun Fan Radio, and that we look forward to continue talking to you, because I'm probably going to come back with some questions about, you know, some things, maybe some tips and techniques that we can use, and we'll call you back on that.
Okay, that'd be great. I'd love to do it.
I'm Terry Brown. This has been Shotgun Fan Radio.